Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
April 8th, 2016, you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You're coming to us from the Great Nutmeg State, my former home, right?
I would allow you to say great if it wasn't so bone-ass cold here.
Now you know why I moved.
It's April. April!
I know. As Prince once crooned.
I expected this in Minnesota. But
Prince once crooned that, you know. Sometimes it snows in April.
Oh, wow. It has been brutally cold here. I did an outdoor soccer match last night. I had literally seven layers. I counted seven layers on. Plus, I took my coat just in case, but I was a tough guy. I didn't have my coat on. But
jeez.
Ridiculous.
Man.
People should not be outdoors in this weather.
Unbelievable. I know. It's just, and it's so funny because I had such a mild winter. One of my friends that lives back there was like, I know I'm screwing myself here, but I'm going to put the snowblower away. And the minute I do, I know we're going to get snow. And sure enough, he put it away, and then they got snow in April. It's just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and they like to tease me, too. When I was in Iceland, they're all like, oh, yeah, 73 degrees here. And then I get off the plane in Boston, and it's 30.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, anyhow, I'm up here at the Ante Up Poker Tour in Mohegan Sun. It's going really great. Got a lot of fun stuff to talk to you about this week. The tour, a little bit about Iceland. Chris went bowling again like he always does. But unfortunately, we do need to start the show on a somber note this week. Terry Ring, founder of online video poker training site One Hand at a Time, and a generous donor of prizes to the Ante Up PokerCast and other Ante Up contests, died last week after suffering a stroke, and he terribly, terribly will be missed.
Yeah, that's sad. He's a great player, great contributor to just the community. This is really sad.
Yeah, I mean, the outpouring of support for him was just staggering, absolutely staggering, and very shocking to me. I don't know if you ever got a chance to talk to him, but I talked to him several times on the phone and exchanged emails and everything because he was just so excited about this One Hand at a Time and really did a good job with it and wanted to, you know, work with us on it. And it was kind of really great to watch how quickly it grew because we're in this business where, you know, people call us all the time saying, hey, I got this great new idea for poker, and 2 months later, it's dead, right?
Yeah.
And this is one where it just took off and grew and grew and grew. And then, you know, had all these fans wearing his One Hand at a Time sweatshirts when they went to the, you know, Mid-States events or the Heartland events. And he really created a great little community there. And it was very, very shocking. It certainly was unexpected.
And, you know, he was a good player, too. I mean, he won a Mid-States event, I think, right? And he had some other caches, and he was just really a good player too. It wasn't just like some guy that came up with some idea. I mean, he's a real good player, and he will be missed.
Yeah, went by the nickname Terrible T, and because he was tough to play with. So
yeah,
but yeah, that sad moment. But all right, well, let's move on to happier things. You know, I was in Iceland. I did not create the prime minister scandal that happened as soon as
I know, that was pretty great timing.
All I asked simply was for him to put one of my selfies on the 500 kroner bill. It's not my fault he chose not to. But I had a great time there. We didn't play any poker, so I'm not going to talk too much about Iceland. They do have some clubs there, obviously, because we have some listeners in Iceland, and gave me some good tips on what to do there. But really, if any of you guys get a chance to go to Iceland, it really, really gave a good run towards trip of a lifetime for me. It was a blast.
Cool. Absolutely. Really, that's really, really cool.
But then we got back here and got back to business here at the Mohegan Sun for the Annie Up Poker Tour. It's going to continue through this weekend. Main event is on Saturday, and that's $1,100 buy-in. Winner gets not only a fistful of cash, but gets their beautiful face on the cover of Annie Up magazine. So come out and feed your ego by playing in that event. And, of course, depending on when you're listening here, there are a couple other events leading up to that. And then, of course, a final event on Sunday for folks that want to play that as well, too. And so this is your state, right? The Nutmeg State, as you say. Yeah, and so it's funny because I'm the one that does all the travel for the company, right? You get to hang out in Florida, enjoy your house. And roaming around the world, trying to drum up business for us, and but I've never made it up to Connecticut because, well, your family friends are up here. So anytime you came up here, you poked your head in at Mohegan and Foxwoods. So there's no reason for me to come up and sweep behind you, right? So it really was an amazingly big miss in my poker travels because these are two fantastic resorts up here. And we're going to talk a lot more about Mohegan because of the reason I'm up here. But really, really, really impressed with this resort. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I was there. My wife was going to be one of the first class of dealers there for roulette. She actually went to when Foxwoods was opening and all that. And so I was there when it all began. And hadn't come here yet, and it was just like, is this for real? And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then Mohegan came in, and it got big, and it was like a competition, and it's just phenomenal. And it's nestled into the Eastern Connecticut woods and everything too. So it's so much nice stuff to look at. You know, the scenery is beautiful, and
ice in the water. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, really though, if you go there in the fall, it's really beautiful.
No, it really is. It's a gorgeous view I have here. It's just a little chilly out.
Yeah.
In terms of aesthetics here, what I'm really impressed about Mohegan, and my wife stayed two nights after Iceland with me, and she said the same thing. I'm quite certain, because nothing is done by chance in casinos, I'm quite certain this was on purpose. But, they have the three different casinos here at Mohegan. They're all connected through that little shopping mall and stuff. But they really succeeded in designing each of them to have a different theme and feel.
Right.
So it's almost really – I mean, you could say they have three casinos here, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's just one big casino. But it's not. It really is three casinos. And, I find myself hanging out when I'm not working over in the – I think it's the Earth where the Wolf Den is. It's kind of more my vibe, a little more fun vibe. They have that Wolf Den concert venue, which is killing that there hasn't been a good show here for me to see there.
Yeah.
And a $2 sports bar, and then they have the Asian area where I walked through yesterday, which was great. And then the other areas have a slightly different vibe to them. So depending on who you are, that's where you go. And then, of course, our tournament is being held completely in the poker room, which is gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. 42 tables, really well appointed, very easy to get in and out of and in around. So very nice. I made it over to Foxwoods Sunday for a concert, but I didn't make it to the poker room. I'll probably get over there later this week, just put my head in there. But just a part of Foxwoods I saw was massive as well, too. So you can see why these two places are on the map. It's just incredible. Now I'm also wondering, there's a lot of new casinos opening. The new Twin River up in Rhode Island just opened.
Right.
Expanded, I think. They're breaking ground on a couple more in Massachusetts. So I think this whole environment here is going to change, and it will be interesting to see, because right now, I mean, if you want to gamble, you got to come to one of these two places. And that's why on Fridays and Saturday nights, I'm happy hanging out in my hotel room, because it is insanely packed here.
Yeah.
I woke up Sunday morning, walked down, and I'm like, it's my moment of zen. All the drunks are sleeping it off. I got the whole place to myself. And I'm usually the drunk, so... but a couple of things I want to say before we talked about the event too. Beyond everything else, I mean, obviously it's just sensory overload being in this nice place here. But the employees are really, really amazing here. I know that sounds kind of silly, because they should be, right? And in a world-class resort, they should be. But the one thing I really noticed, and I don't get this at all the places I go. In fact, actually, I noticed it here. Every single employee, no matter where, whether they're at the Ben and Jerry's counter, whether they're on the slot floor, the poker room, the hotel, they go out of their way to say hi to you here.
Hmm.
Hey, how you doing? And that's such like, you know, employee training 101 stuff, but it doesn't happen anymore in this society. You know, I mean, a lot of employees will talk to you when you talk to them, or if they see you that you're lost, they'll come up and help you out. But aside from that, they don't really go out of their way to specifically say, hey, how are you doing today? And hope you're enjoying yourself. And I noticed that like everywhere. That's really interesting. And I should say a little bit of my geographic snobbery. I didn't expect it in the Northeast. You know, because in the Northeast, people, life moves a little faster up here, I think. That's probably the way to say it, right?
Yeah.
And not as more cordial and slower as it was in the Midwest where I grew up. So I've kind of gotten used to that when I travel, and that's fine. But just the employee reaction here, I would never think I'm in the Northeast. So that's changing my opinion of your home area.
Just come back and talk to me for a few more days. You'll
lose that's right. Yeah, then I'm like, okay, all right.
It's funny you say that, though, because when I moved to Florida, that was the first thing I noticed was people were a lot nicer here, and things moved a little slower here, and it's instant. You know, my experience when I was living there was just everybody was just aggravated because you weren't going fast enough or, you know, whatever, and when I got here, it was just totally different, and you immediately notice it. So when you're getting that at Mohegan, then they're definitely running a fine establishment there.
Absolutely. One guy in particular I got to point out. So I'm in the folks that are coming up to visit. The back of the poker room, you see our Big Annie Up sign back there and table, and that's where I hang out and work. And so yesterday morning I was hanging out, you know, just emails, whatever I need to do. And this gentleman, an employee, who literally was sweeping the floor, comes by the desk and stops, and he's like, can you tell me what's going on here? And I'm like, so I started explaining it to it. And then he's like, you know, I figure I work here, so I should probably know everything that's going on in case anybody ever asked me.
Wow.
And I'm like, that is the most awesome thing ever.
That's a huge answer.
I mean, here's a guy, his job, sweeping the floor. Hey, the world needs floor sweepers too. And was doing it with a great aplomb, and then just decided, hey, somebody might actually ask me what's going on here, and I need to have the answer rather than just point them to somebody else. And that was really a defining moment of this whole trip for me, and how well they train the employees here. So
that's huge.
That was great.
Yeah,
right?
That is fantastic.
Now onto the poker. Really, really great start to the tournament. The first three events beat the guarantees. I assume yesterday's did too. I just haven't got the results, so I don't know for sure. But beat the guarantees. Players coming out enjoying themselves. I had a couple guys come up to me at the desk and say, hey, we usually play over at Foxwoods, heard about this event, want to come over here and get some player of the year points. So that's good to hear that they want to come over and try that out. Obviously I'm hearing from some of our listeners too that they're going to make their way up here. Haven't met any yet, but I'm hoping this weekend there'll be a big crush of them coming in. But it's going really, really well. And, you know, it's an interesting situation here because they don't have ballroom space available. I mean, they do have ballroom space or convention center space here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not available for the tournament. So they're running this entire series out of the poker room. Now, fortunately, it's a 42-table room, big room. So they have the space to do that. But they've been doing a really good job of running the tournament and still having plenty of cash tables, which is where you still make your money, right?
Right.
Going at all times. And, you know, I was talking to Rebecca Carabino, the tournament director here, who put this all together. And I told her I feel for her because it is – we get this on our cruises a lot too, where we have we know the maximum space we have to accommodate our event, right?
Right.
And it's easy. Anybody can put together a very successful tournament series when you have more capacity than you can ever imagine. You know, if you have 100 tables available to you, you could put anything on the schedule you want and be able to fill it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you only have 42 tables and you need some of those for cash, then you got to get a little bit more creative in how you design the event. Because the last thing you want is 5,000 people in here that you can't accommodate, right?
Right.
But at the same time, you don't want the tournament to be small and have empty tables. So it's really, I think, a lot of science going involved here in figuring out the right buy-ins, the right schedule, the events to make sure this room is full and not overflowing at the same time.
Can't be easy, you know? And you don't want to. At the same time, you're providing for the locals, but at the same time, you don't want to tick them off either, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance.
very challenging, and I've been very, very impressed with how well the first events have gone off like this. So I suspect they'll finish that way as well, too. So folks, come out and join us. If you need more details, go to andyupmagazine.com/MohicanSun. Has the schedules and all that. And I think you probably can still get the discounted room rates, which are really nice from what I hear. So.
Sweet.
And then one more thing before we pull move on. I just thought this was funny because, you know, I'm kind of a political guy, right?
Yeah.
But I know other people aren't. But I say even political guys like me hate this one year out of every four when it's a presidential election.
Yeah.
Because it's just nasty, right? And this year is nasty as well, too. So just a funny story that just kind of illustrates how weird people get in a presidential election year. So I'm on the 10th floor here in my hotel. I get in the elevator. Stop set, like floor 8, right? And one guy gets on, so it's just me and him, right? Me being the born and raised in the Midwest polite guy. Hey, how you doing? kid you not, he's like, I'm doing great if Trump gets in. And then all 8 floors, he was on this political diatribe that I didn't ask for. And I don't know where it came from. And they get to the bottom, and then I'm like, please let me know that you're going to walk the other way because I'm not into this conversation. And I just walked away. And I would bring this up even if he picked my guy or my person. It's just, who does that?
People like to be heard, I guess. I don't know. They spread it one person at a time, maybe. That's his mantra. I don't know.
It's like me walking on the, walking on the elevator, like, hey, did you see that European soccer match yesterday? Like, if somebody's on the elevator and has a soccer jersey on, okay, I get that. They might be interested, but I didn't have any political thing on. I didn't have any red, white, and blue even on, right? Certainly didn't have a Make America Great hat on. So there was no reason for him to think that I was interested in having this conversation, but he wanted to have it anyhow. So
this is why you have to do one of two things. You have to let them engage first. Don't say anything in the elevator. Say something to you. And the minute he says something to you and you know something's a little off, you have to know a second language like me and say you don't speak English in that language. So, mi dispiace.
Right, I should have started speaking Icelandic to him, right?
Non parlo inglese. I can teach you that if you want. I can teach you those 5 words, and then you're all set. You don't have to worry about anything after that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Then my luck, the guy's going to be an Italian.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least you tried, though. Then if he starts talking Italian, you're like, sorry, I really speak English. And then maybe you can't, I don't know. But
well, you're right. I just need misdirection for 8 floors, so.
That's right. And then you get out the thing, and you're like, sorry, sucker. I had a pretty eventful week.
But you're out bowling.
Yeah, you know, as a lot of you probably know, I've gotten back into my first passion in life. And something, I had one of those epiphanies when I was bowling. You know, I have an epiphany every once in a while on the show.
Love that word.
On a week ago today, I was bowling in a league for my friend. I was subbing for him, actually. And the last game of the night, I bowled 300. And so whenever I sub...
Hey, oh, golf clap.
Yeah. Whenever I sub, they have pots where you get into the pots and try to win money. But they also have things called brackets where you randomly go up and get heads up against other people. And then if you win the first game, you move on to the second game and the third game. So I had a very good night. I had bowled a very high series, and I had made it to the last game through pretty much all my brackets. And so the last game, I bowled 300. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to win all my brackets. you know, not to mention everything else. They give you money for bowling a 300 and all sort of crap, and they give you a ring and all that. So anyway, I'm all excited. I'm waiting for the night to end. So, and all of a sudden, they're like, you might not win your last bracket. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, I bowled 300. It's a perfect score. And he's like, yeah, but they're handicap brackets, right? And I'm like, well, yeah, but I mean, what? So it turns out there was somebody I was bowling against who has a lesser average than me and was up against me in the brackets. So I was giving him like 26 pins. And so he had... What was possible was still he could still possibly bowl a 279 going into like the 7th frame.
He could pip you.
So he could pip me. And I'm like, what? I'm like, wait a minute. I just bowled a perfect game. Are you telling me I'm not going to win the high pot in these brackets, you know? And then the guy ended up splitting like in the 10th frame or something, and I ended up winning. But it made me have the epiphany. And it's not just unique to bowling either. These handicap systems are in a lot of sporting events, especially golf.
Yep.
And I want, you're always bringing up this whole what's going to start the next boom thing. And although I don't think this would be a boom thing, I wonder if anyone's ever approached it this way for poker, tournament poker. Clearly, I'm a better bowler than that guy. Right. And clearly, I'm a better bowler than, say, you.
Yep.
But if we were to bowl 50 games, take your average for those 50, take my average for those 50, and then base it on a handicap system, right, on the 51st game, we are equal. Because it's only doing what you're capable of and then making up for it based on the average to a certain point. So,
exactly.
Right. So we know what a handicap is. So same with golf. If you shoot 15 rounds and you keep shooting 10 over, your handicap's 10. So in poker, if you're a poker player and you keep playing in a league and you keep playing in this tournament and you keep finishing 20th, you are the 20th best player in that league if they're all the same players.
Sure.
Basically, if that's what your average is, you're roughly the 20th best player. Like my average right now is like 230 something. But I don't always bowl 230. I'll bowl a 270, I'll bowl a 210, you know, and then I'll bowl a 220 or something.
Right.
So I'm not always bowling 230, but I'm not. So same with when you finish 20th in a poker league, you may finish 8th one time, but you'll probably get knocked out first another time. And I just wonder if there is a way to level the playing field in poker. Because clearly, you know, Phil Ivey is a better poker player than me.
Right.
And I get no chance to beat him other than my brain, which is fine. And believe me, I'm not... I mean, in bowling, when you get there and you, these guys get a little bit of luck when they, you know, they throw a really bad shot, but they still happen to strike. Same with poker. You get your money in bad, but you tend to get a good card on the turn, and it gives you a straight that you shouldn't have gotten, or a flush, you know, runner-runner or something. So there's some luck built into every moment in both sports, just like, or whatever, both competitions, if you don't want to call them sports. And I wondered if there was a way to do that, where after the first three tournaments, you're paying to be in these tournaments, so even if you want to say, well, I'm just going to throw away my buy-in for the first three times, they call it sandbagging in bowling, where you intentionally throw the game and not bowl well, so you get more pins next week or something. But eventually it catches up with you, because the more league weeks you bowl, the harder it is to come down in pins. And the same with poker, I would think. The more tournaments you play, you still have to divide it by the total number of tournaments you're playing in. So you may throw the first couple to get whatever it is you're going to get. But I think that there is some way to do this in a tournament system where you could give them more chips to start. Now, again, it might be, okay, well, you're just going to give the better players a benefit because there's more chips to table and he's going to win more from you. But there might be some way to do it. Maybe you give that player fewer chips than everybody else. Or so. I'm not really sure. I'm just why I'm opening up to a discussion. But, you know, it's one of those things that could take the entire show, or it could take 2 minutes. You could laugh at me and say it's ridiculous. I don't know.
It's ridiculous. No.
But how can you, I mean, in bowling, if I'm going to enter a league or a tournament, unless I specifically say I'm entering a scratch tournament where we all have to start, we all have to bowl on our ability, the handicapped bowlers are going to get handicapped pins. And in golf, same thing. If you're entering a league or something, they're going to get strokes. So can't poker be that way? Or do we all have to be like, you know, and I'm talking about cash games. I'm talking about tournaments only.
Right.
Right. I would think that that would be something where you can get the average Joe to show up more often if he thinks, I'm going to get more chips than everybody. Even though you're really, if you play to your best ability and the pro plays to his best ability, the pro will probably win, but there's always that chance that you're going to go further in a tournament now because you're getting more chips and more opportunities, just like in bowling. These guys, I mean, last night we bowled a team that, you know, they were horrible, but they beat it. We split with them last night because they got so many pins and a couple of our bowlers were bad on the last game that they beat us by so much in the last game that they ended up winning the total game too, and we split with them. And it's because if the pro messes up a little bit, or the good bowler messes up a little bit, you know, the other person has a chance. Or if they do well, then they really have a chance because now they're doing better than their average. And so I just wondered if you thought that was something that would be interesting to you in poker.
Yeah, it would be. It would have to be in a very specific scenario, though, right? So it's not something that could just take over everywhere, right? Because It would have to be, as you mentioned, in a league format or some kind of controlled format, right?
Yeah.
Where everything is verified and the same people, or you're going against the same people, generally speaking. So, yeah, I think there's probably a case to be made that you could casino could do it in a league, or if they wanted to start their own kind of like mini GPL thing and have handicaps. I guess what I would say is that from the time that I was a kid and bowled and golfed, handicaps were a thing, right?
Right.
It's kind of interesting. I'm thinking about this, and I'm not one of these bleeding heart people, but it's weird to say handicap, right?
It's weird to say it if you think of it as, you know, somebody whose ability, but it's the system that's handicapped, yeah, not the people. Yeah,
you're not as good as him, so you're handicapped, right?
Right.
But I guess what I'm saying is that when we got into bowling, that was commonplace,
right?
So now to introduce it to some place where it hasn't been, I think you're going to get some brushback from the better players.
And I agree. I mean, I'm not...
Make this work, you really need to have buy-in of everyone. Because if you have just... If all the good players say, forget it, I'm not going to play this, and it's just the bad players, and then they all have about the same handicap because right. they're equally as bad, then it doesn't really help. But beyond that, though, I mean, I think... You could probably do it in some sort of scoring system or finishing system or something like that. I mean, chips seem to be the easiest thing, which is what you brought up. But I just know how poker players are, right? If, you know, they don't like to have fewer chips or more chips to start with than somebody else. They just complain and whine about it, right? Hey, why didn't you get so much? Well, and you don't see it very often, but I know there's some places where, you know, if you're in a cash game at 8 a.m., you know, then you get more chips in the tournament because that's a way of getting you into the room and playing cash and getting their cash games off the ground.
Yeah.
But the players come to the tournament, hey, how come I didn't get any more? And we even had this on our cruise, too. We did. We don't do it anymore. But when we first started, we were giving you more chips if you pre-registered.
Right. Or the tidal wave thing. You know, even though you earn those chips, if you're not a good enough player, you're not getting as many.
Yeah, tidal wave's a little different.
But it pissed people off that they come to the table and some guy's got 85 grand and you got 10.
Right. But that way you're earning it. I mean, right. The other way we did it, which was not a great idea, admittedly, you know, we wanted people to pre-register so we knew how many people we had so we could set up the tournament right. And then people show up and they're like, hey, come on. Really? I don't get the same amount of chips. So I think that's kind of be the problem, I think, with your idea. But it's interesting. There's probably something there somewhere. But
the thing about it is if you sign up for the league, you know what you're getting into. So you can't complain about that. Either you don't play the league... Or you know what I mean? You don't have to play the league. It's a totally different tournament that's going on in the corner of the poker room. And I know what you're saying about never been, but other things that haven't been introduced, you know, like team poker, that didn't happen back when poker started. Tournaments didn't happen back when they started. Tournaments only came around in the 70s when they started the World Series or the late 60s. So, you know, I mean, something has to happen to try to save this game sometimes.
Let me ask you this, because here's the interesting thing. So, I would think you'd probably agree with this, that if there wasn't a handicap in bowling, there wouldn't be very many leagues, right?
Right.
Because if I'm going to join a league and roll against you, I know I'm going to get beat almost every week. You know, I might get lucky one week and have just everything goes right and you got something in your head and, you know, I'm going to win once, right?
Right.
But generally speaking, you're going to clean my clock, right?
Right.
So that's kind of why it's in place, is to make it so people want to play, so everybody has a chance, right?
Right.
So what about poker is it that makes me want to sit down in a tournament where I know I'm overmatched but still put my money up and play?
I know. What is it? Why do people who don't know what they're doing still continue to do it?
So I think it's because we feel this that we always have an opportunity to still win. You know, things go right the right way, or we play really well, we still have a chance to win. Or probably more likely, I would say, is that we don't really know who we're up against, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in your bowling league and these are the same people I bowl every week, I know, hey, Chris has rolled 12, 13, 300s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And has a whatever average, right? So, but, you know, for example, here at Mohegan, I've never played here before, right? I don't recognize any of these players, so I don't know what I'm getting myself into in any of these tournaments if I were to enter. And I actually haven't yet. It's kind of odd. I might get this whole series without playing one. But so there's that mystery, I guess, where I'm like, hey, I might actually be better than average here, or I might be less. I mean, obviously, you know about the buy-ins and things like that. You know, I'm not going to jump in 1,100 because that's going to be tough no matter where you go, right? But so I guess there's something there that propels us as poker players to play, even if we don't feel we're the best. Where I don't think that's the case in bowling. Maybe golf. Golf's more social than bowling, I think, but definitely not bowling.
Do you think that this would hurt the skill argument for poker? Because in bowling, you clearly say that you would not go up against me.
Because now you're saying we can demonstrate that there's a difference between you and me. And that's why we're giving me extra chips, right?
Well, no, I'm talking about your level, what you were just talking about a second ago, about the fact that that's why people go and play, because they think they can win without this handicap. And so what I'm saying is, does that view make it seem like, because you're duping the player who's delusional that they're better than Phil Ivey.
Just like lucky that day. And,
yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess. But, you know, there's probably, I think you're right. This is a conversation that could go on forever. We wanted it to. I think there's something to be said about people not always sitting down at the table and thinking that they're the worst, or they're not the worst, but that they're not the best, right?
Right.
But, you know, poker is also a little bit different than bowling, too. I mean, I could enter a tournament with a lot of really good players and not knock out any of those good players and still win, right?
Right.
Because those good players can knock each other out, and then I could have enough chips knocking out the people that I can knock out and then win, right? Where right. In bowling, no one's knocking you out, right?
Well, so not until the end.
Says it comes and rolls for 300 a day. There's nothing we can do about it, right? So I got to go through you at some point to win your bracket, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is if it's a tournament, though, and it's a stepladder finals, you could be the recipient of being ahead of somebody who would have beaten you, but they got beat earlier.
Off the bracket thing and just say in a normal league.
So right, a normal league, right.
Scott's unicorns versus Chris's tortoises, right?
Right.
And, my team's got to beat your team. I mean, there's not going to be another team that beats your team so I can win.
Right, when it's right.
So that's probably a little bit different than here, where you have the ability to manage your tournament and still probably get a good, obviously all poker has some luck to it, so which we all know, but I don't know, they're probably just too different for this.
Yeah,
that's probably what I'm thinking the more we talk about it.
But you think, idea. You would think that the better players too at the same time wouldn't really, because like even though I'm bowling Joe Schmo, I know that he, you know, even if he gets all of his pins, it's not 100% based on my average. So even if he gets 30 pins for me, I know he's going to make mistakes. You know what I mean? So there's going to be that chance for me to catch him, just like in poker, even though I know that that player,
right.
You know what I mean, is better than me.
I think for that to make it work, you'd have to, the sales pitch has to be on the good players, right? Because they're the ones taking it on the chin to begin with.
Yeah.
And at some point, you need to convince them that even though they're taking it on the chin, more people are going to enter the league, so there's more money to win.
And there's more chips. This, more right? chips that you can take.
Well, not just chips. I'm thinking the payouts have to be bigger. So let's say, you know, there's an established poker league that gets 20 players every quarter or whatever, right?
Right.
And then you come to the good players and say, hey, I think the reason we're only getting 20 is because you win every time, right?
Right.
So I don't want to tell you not to win because you need to win. But what if we were to give extra chips to players that had demonstrated somehow that they weren't as good as you? Obviously, you're at a disadvantage now. But what if that promotion ends up getting 60 people in the league? So now when you win, admittedly a little bit harder, but when you win now, you're going to win three times as much as you would if we didn't do it.
Yeah.
That would be the case you'd have to make.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you play to their wallet and their ego,
right.
too. You know, you'd be beating more players, winning more money. There's more chips on the table for you to win, you know. And it's a regular thing, so you'll get to play against these same people. You'll know exactly how to play them each week, but you know, so there's ways to get them to convince that it's a good for poker, but it would always have to be tournaments, and it would have to be this sort of small little grassroots thing, and maybe it would take off. But I just I look around my entire life, it's been that way. You golf and you get a handicap. You play poker, you don't get any handicap. You bowl, well, you get a handicap. But
maybe you could do something like a poker night in America could probably do this, maybe.
Yeah.
Where they just give the rank amateur two or three times as many chips and just see how if that's enough of an equalizer.
Yeah.
Obviously, poker's a lot more complex than that, so that might not be the way to go. But that would be probably the simplest way of doing it.
Feel like I've seen something like that before, where it was like a sit and go, and they gave the rank amateur double the chips to go up against all the pros. Like it was like a poker after dark or something. I feel like I saw that before.
Well, and that's the other way of looking at it. We're talking about trying to sell it to the good players, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you could sell it to the bad players by saying, "Hey, I know you don't want to enter this tournament because these are all sharks. But what if we gave you double chips, quadruple chips? Would you now feel more comfortable playing, even though you know that they are more skilled than you? But now you have more weapons."
Right? And maybe you set it up so that like it's six sit and goes at once, you know, shootouts or whatever they call them.
Yeah.
And then so that way you're only doing against those eight people that night, and in your league, and you're it's not one designated player who has chips, or they all have sort of different stacks. But then you move on after that instead of it being a field of these guys with billions of chips. But there's something to this, but I don't know. It hit me when I was bowling. I'm like, how am I going to lose?
Yeah.
I bowled a perfect game. And then they're like, yeah, you're going to lose. And then I didn't, but I almost did. So
that's awesome. All right. Well, we got a little lengthy show here, but this is in the news, so I figured we had to get it in here. Reigning world champ Joe McKeon is blaming, quote, the media for the World Series of Poker's decision to move event starting times up to 11 a.m. this year. And they went on to say that World Series of Poker players are slaves. So, Chris, wow. Where do we even start with this?
Did you say it was Joe McKeon or Sheldon Cooper? I'm not sure what you said there. Very interesting. Yes, I admit it. I'm responsible for the starting times moving to 11 a.m. You know, I said, Seth, please help us out.
We might not even be at the World Series this year, but go ahead and screw the players.
Yeah, we're the media, and everybody who's not in the media thinks they know what the media is, so I'm going to do exactly what Joe McKeon said and ask for an 11 a.m. start time and make him a slave.
It's just so mind-boggling because, if you guys haven't heard about this thing going on, there's Twitter stuff all over, so if you're one of the Twitter people, I'm not, but you can follow it and see. Well, there's a bunch of quote-unquote media people saying, huh? We're not in the room. We don't decide starting times. And even if we did, why do I care? I mean, I care when, I guess if you're covering it, maybe you want the tournament to end a little earlier, but because you started an hour early, it doesn't mean anything, right?
Right.
So there's really no, I don't even understand why the media, end quote, would even want to do this. Let alone why he thinks that we have the power to do this. And, you know, there were players that were, I think Negreanu was one of them, I think, I could be wrong, but who does have the ear of the World Series and kind of advises them and says, you know, hey, I've been in all these meetings and not a single media member in here talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so first of all, where did this come from? I'm just really curious, and I hope that eventually – I don't know how he's going to do an interview at some point because what media is going to want to talk to him now. But I'm just curious where this crazy idea came from.
Did you say Joe McKeon or Donald Trump? Because the media is to blame for pretty much everything.
Oh, man. It's so wild. And there's so much about it that's wild. I mean, where does this even come into your mind? What makes you think it? Why does it really matter? I mean, again, I'm not a player, so I mean, he has more skin in the game than I do. So maybe this 11 a.m. is really just brutal to him.
Yeah.
But I figure when they started last year, noon or one. I mean, it wasn't drastic. It wasn't like they started at 5 and now they're at 11 a.m. So you got that going on. The other thing too is I know we've talked a lot about poker being whether it's a sport or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think to some degree we do consider professionals in any kind of endeavor to be professional, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the top of their game, right? And I got to say, Joe, I'm sorry, but if you're a professional, part of being a professional is being able to adjust to different tournament things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you don't like it at 11 a.m., then maybe you go to bed an hour early. I mean, yeah, maybe that's inconvenient for you, I guess. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like... It seems like somebody playing at your level should be able to make that kind of adjustment. And if you can't make that kind of adjustment, what kind of adjustments can you make at the poker table when you need to, right?
Hey, you know, if you don't like listening to Howard Stern, don't listen.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
You don't want to play at 11 a.m.? Don't play. You know, it's funny that they're calling them slaves, first of all, is just incredibly insensitive. But other than that, last time I checked, when slaves, you know, didn't have the choice to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
You don't want to play in the World Series at that time? Don't. You don't want to do what the World Series says? Don't. But slaves don't have that opportunity. You know, they get killed or beaten.
I was going to say, Joe, maybe you need to go to Netflix and watch 12 Years a Slave or Roots and really know what slaves are. And maybe you'll actually have some compassion for these words that you're just throwing around sloppily for no reason. Now, I imagine what he would say is, hey, you know, to be a pro, you have to play at the World Series. So, you know, we're stuck with whatever they are. Well, stuck is a different word than slaves. So, But still, you're right. I mean, you have the option of not playing if you want, and if a lot of players quit playing, I bet you the World Series changes the start time.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
Do that little survey every year. So just wow, just so then the final thing I'll say is that we talk a lot on the show too about what we want our world champion to do for poker, right? Or what the role of a world champion
right.
is, should say, right? And you have some like me that really. It's up to you, obviously, if as the world champion, what you're going to do. But I'm always rooting for the player to win that's going to be an ambassador of the game and go out and try to grow the game and do good things for the game. This year, we got a guy that's just a jerk. And that bothers me.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the best he can do for poker is blame the media for the tournament starting a couple hours early. That's your contribution to the game. That's what you want to do with this this 1 year. Good luck.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you just, you know, you can't pick your ambassador for this. You know, that's why expecting them to be one is so, it's such a crapshoot. It's difficult. You can't just, you know, hand pick and vote for the person to be the ambassador. It's just, if you assume this guy is going to be the ambassador, you're stuck with whatever he decides to talk about. And this is just not a good idea.
And not to get too political with it, but it's just like politics. If you don't like the candidates, you need to groom a situation where people that are better candidates come up.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of our job on this show is to call out poker players that I think have stepped over the line and hope that all the people that listen to our show have more compassion for what they're saying and are more intelligent and more, I don't know, good for the game, and hopefully one of our listeners will win, and then we won't have to worry about this, right?
That's right.
So go out and win, someone.
Okay, any updates? All good things must come to an end, Scott. It's getting harder and harder to find good, reliable, free, web-based voicemail programs. To maintain one of the staples of the Antiup PokerCast since its inception, the Antiup PokerCast Hotline. So when our current vendor shuts its doors on May 1st, so will the Antiup PokerCast Hotline. If you still want to hear your voice on our show, don't worry. You can still email us an audio file. Just don't make it more than a minute. Don't clog up our mailbox. Make sure it actually gets mail to us. But it's sad that it's going, but it's time.
Yeah. And you can still call the hotline for another 2 weeks.
Yeah, until May 1st. Yeah. So, also, don't forget about Papes, our free online fan series, which holds events on the dates ending in the 6th. Oops. So the next events are April 6th. April 16th, April 26th, and details can be found at Antiup Nation Events Group Discussions on PokerRadius.com.
And of course, April 6th was last night, so congratulations to the winner. So.
Yeah, it's okay.
I have trouble with my dates when I'm traveling, sorry.
Those were still the dates. They just weren't the next events, I guess. But hey, each week we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes, the two shushes, just makes it tough, in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Rob Voliston. Says, you're sitting at a 1-2 no-limit cash table with 10 players, and you're sixth to act. All players before you call the $2, and you're sitting with ace-ace with four players left to go. How much do you commonly raise here? $10 too little? $15 too much?
I'm going to say there's probably not a too much answer. Well, I guess there probably is if you're playing deep stacks, but I would err on the side of too much rather than too little, right?
I would hearken back to my teen years when I watched television, and my favorite show was All My Children. Putting it all in, buddy. I'm betting all my kids. Well, no, no.
You have 5,000 in front of you.
Yeah, no. Well, okay, so standard... First of all, it starts with the standard raise at the table. If a standard raise at a 1-2 was 10, clearly you're not raising the 10 here. That's a huge mistake. So let's just start with that. If it's 10, then you say to yourself, all right, I have pretty much 5 limpers. That's 10 more. So you at least want to make it 20. Right. At least. And even that, considering the cash games, the way they run usually, you're probably still going to get a couple of callers there, depending on what you want. If you want one or two callers, and 20's probably right, I might just make it 25, and 15's not too much. 15's too little.
Yeah.
In a cash game. You know, we're not talking about tournaments here. We're talking about cash games, 1-2, right. Where every time, and people, a lot of times you get in a 1-2 game, and guys start out raising 12 to 15.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So I would say, depend on what your usual raise is at table, and then add whatever they did to it, and then maybe even a little more just to discourage some people. So, and even that might not work, but you don't want to get crazy either.
Your general point is to take the standard raise and add $2 for every limper.
Yeah. Right? Sorry, yeah.
Now,
I'm sorry.
His scenario is a little different, I think, because it's aces. So, one, you don't get aces very often, right?
Right.
So you want to get value out of them when you do, and it's not guaranteed you're going to win with them, obviously.
Right.
So, the fact that we have so many limpers, the tendency, I think, in a 1-2 game is that it's very hard to thin the field unless you make a sizable bet. Because even if people have, like, pocket eights or 5-6 suited or something, once everybody starts coming along, they just throw the money in, whether it's the right odds or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're up against 5 people with aces, and good luck with that. Now you've just turned your aces into a set mining, and that's not fun. So I'm more inclined here, if I'm at a table where people aren't paying attention to my bet sizing, right? Because generally you want to be consistent so they don't know what you have. But at 1-2 tables, I don't think they're really paying attention too much. So I can go a little bit out of line here and not tip my hand. I'm going to raise more for the reason of, one, I'm trying to thin the field. But also, I think if you would shoot something like a 30, 35 here, maybe even a 40 if it's a loose table, you're probably going to get some people that look at it and go, hey, this guy's just trying to buy this pot, right?
Yeah.
Because you got four limpers? Yeah, four limpers already. Now they think you're just trying to buy the pot. And that's exactly what I want them to think, right?
Yeah.
So now maybe somebody will re-raise us thinking, hey, he's just buying the pot. Now I've got all this money that he put in too, and that's exactly what I want. So I would rather do a little misdirection here. You might end up with players that think, oh my gosh, he's raising the 40, he's got to have aces, and they all fold. But, you know, the only bad thing about that is you don't get as much value out of it, but you don't lose with them, right? So,
yeah.
Whereas I think you're more likely to lose your stack with aces if you let too many people come in. So,
really quickly, I do recall a session at Derby Lane once, and this is before they built the new poker room, too, way back. I was sitting against the wall and had ace-ace. And there were a bunch of limpers, and I made it like, I did something like this too. It was like 25, 30 to go or something. I got one caller. Flop came really innocuous, like deuce 7-9 or something. And of course, I bet he raises, I shove, he calls, he turns over, and it was like 7-9 or deuce 7 or something, you know, just to be a wise ass. And of course, he busts me. And it was like, you know, nothing paired, nothing helped. And I was like, wow. So sometimes you'll get guys like that, but more time, and when you do, more times than not, though, you're still going to win. So right. There is the cautionary tale that people who do call those $35 raises or whatever, they will probably do it with crappy cards, and they're hoping to hit the crappy cards, and they're hoping you have, like, tens, and they flop two pair on you and just get your whole stack for that one chance. So that could happen, but generally you're going to be okay when you're heads up with somebody with aces, so... not to extend the show any longer, but I just remember that going felt same, almost exactly the same situation.
Absolutely.
Got a brand new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing at a $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em Casino cash game. This table has a lot of solid players who like to get tricky. We bought in for $500, and after about 2 hours of play, we have pretty much broke even. The blinds post, and we are in the cutoff. The under-the-gun limps. This player is probably the trickiest at the table. He has limped in early position with kings, but has also done a similar move with 9-8 suited, getting in for cheap and busting a set of jacks when he hit his open-ended straight draw on the turn. He also got a $400 high hand bonus when he flopped quad fours. He bought into the game with $300 and currently sits with about $1,500. He is truly a juggernaut. There are two callers to us, and we look down at the ace of clubs, king of clubs. This is going to be a dangerous hand, because it is impossible to get a read on this opponent. With about $20 in the pot already, we account for the limpers and up the 5x table standard raise to 8x, 40 to go. It's folded around to the under the gun, who has the chips ready, and snap calls. The other two players fold. There is already about $100 in the pot when the flop comes down the king of spades, jack of diamonds, eight of diamonds. This flop is a good one for our hand. We do not have a flush draw, but we have hit top pair, top kicker. We are emboldened with our hand when the under the gun checks. If he once again limped in with some type of suited connectors, diamonds, we want to make him pay. We make a pot-sized bet. Our opponent once again calls. Snaply. With 300 in the pot and 140 invested in it, the turn pairs the board with the jack of clubs. Other than king jack or jack jack, I'm not sure what type of jack our opponent could be holding. He's tricky, but not dumb enough to play the rookie under the gun at this table. We can eliminate that from his range. Our opponent checks, and maybe this was a mistake, but wanting to keep the pot small, we check behind. The pot is still about 300, and the river is the four of hearts. Our opponent thinks for a short time before shoving. That's right, shoving. He's invested 140 into the pot, and he makes a $1,300 bet. Granted, if we want to see them, we've got to put in our remaining 360. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Anti-Up group discussions. This comes from Joe Scales. And he says, hey guys, I've been listening for a while now, but never contributed anything. Slacker! however, I have a hand that I would love to hear some critique on. He says, this is a $100 rebuy tournament, and we are in the sixth level of the night. We all started the tournament with 10,000 chips, and I had just busted out of the tournament on a hand that is a whole different story that we won't go into. Top two pair versus strip four. So we're going to go into it a little bit.
Okay.
So he's on the second buy-in. Blinds are 300, 600 with a 50 ante, and he's in the big blind with his starting stack of 10,000.
Nice.
The action folds to the small blind, who says, incidentally, is the one who took my chips in the aforementioned hand. And min raises to 1,200. I look down to jack of hearts, nine of hearts.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. These hands, oh man, I hate these situations. Because it's like, the only thing I'm going to do is probably fold. I mean, I have a one gapper. Yeah, it's suited. And I'll have position.
A min bet? Really?
I don't know. Maybe sometimes I just like, you know what? Let's just move on with this. You know, I'm gonna be the button soon. Because I mean, if you think about it, that's more than a tenth of your stack.
There's like 1,700 chips out there. You're gonna throw it away for 600?
Yeah, I know, but just ticks me off.
Well, so, I didn't say it didn't tick me off, but.
Yeah, I guess I just... Well, I'm not going to go re-raising, because what if the guy actually legitimately has a hand?
Exactly.
So, I guess I would just call, but it just ticks me off, because it's hand of the week. You know? You know what's happening.
I'm sorry, it's part of this... It's a segment of the show, we got to do it.
All right, I'm going to call and be very cautious. Cautious call.
Excellent. Yeah, I would, if the guy didn't just knock me out and probably is sitting with 20K plus here, I might even get frisky and re-raise just to see whether he's making a steal attempt. It's interesting that he min-raised it. So I would say almost always in the small blind folds around, I'm going to throw in a min-raise just to see if I can get somebody to fold like you,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with anything, and try to pick up these chips. And if not, hey, it cost me 900, right, out of my at least 20,000 plus stack. So I think people do that generally, and, you know, rather than do the normal 3x or 2.5x, they just min-raise and say, because again, you're just trying to accomplish your goal. If you accomplish the goal, get the blind out of the way, you bet the minimum out, and then if he raises you, then you can throw it away.
Right.
If you have nothing, right?
Right.
So I'm always going to assume when someone min-raises a small blind that they are just trying to steal. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't have a hand. They could have aces or kings or something, but I'm going to assume that they steal and see what goes on. So I can make a case for raising here and just finding out now before I get too committed, or I can make a case of just calling because I got a hand that could flop pretty big here and then be careful with it as we go on.
Right.
I would say since I just got my butt kicked and I'm back in, and this guy has a lot more chips than I'm going to err on the side of caution and call and hope for a good flop.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a long way of saying what I just said, but yeah, go ahead.
All right, the flop comes down. That's what he does. He calls. The flop comes down. Queen of spades, 10 of diamonds, 5 of spades, and our opponent bets 1,800.
Mm. See, you know, just because I have a straight draw, you've now got me committed an extra 600, so I'm down to 94, and now if I want to call this... this is more than 10% my stack easily.
Yes.
You know, just to hit a straight, you know, I don't know. All right. I don't know. I don't know. I want to fold because it's Jack 9 and you're playing for straight, and even that, you know, he might have King Jack for all we know, and then an ace could come and he's got a better straight and we don't have the straight because he had the king and we didn't. So it's very I don't want to play this hand anymore. I want to get out of this hand.
I want to take your ball and go home.
Yeah, I want to quit. I want to fold. I really do
have that option. So all right, so here's a couple things. I think obviously we are in agreement that calling is not possible here, right?
Right.
It's more than 10% of our stack. Folding does make sense because if we have to raise, it's going to be a significant part of a stack, and probably pot commit us, right?
Right.
So the raise has got to be at least 3,600, and that gets us down to less than 6,000 now, with about that in the pot, right? So,
right.
So it's almost one of the scenarios where we have to shove, or at least know that we're going to... if we know we're pot commit, we got to shove, right? So really it becomes a shove or fold situation. So I think at this point it kind of depends to me on a couple things. How many bullets were I planning to fire in this tournament?
If
I came here with $300 or $400, I'm like, hey, I'm going to fire three times.
Right.
This is an opportunity for me to shoot that second bullet, and if I lose, then I still got another opportunity to get in. If came here with just one bullet, I'm on my second bullet. I mean, two bullets, I'm on my second bullet now. Then I don't know if this is where I want to make my stand, considering I only put an extra 600 in, right?
Right.
So that's kind of the decision. And I'm not in Joe's mind, so I don't know where he is on that. But I would go either one of those ways depending on my fundage and my plan for this tournament.
The other thing, too, is that within this situation, he's pretty late in the tournament. So the rebuy period's got to be ending pretty soon, if not already ended after he busted that last hand.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what the lines are.
Yeah, so if he's into the hole, I'm in this now for the ride, I'm folding.
Yeah, this is probably a level 6 or something, right?
So. Yeah, that's what it said. It's, well, 300, 600, so I guess that's pretty far in.
Now, the other case for shoving here is, what if this guy was trying to steal, which is what we thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we stubbornly called, and now he's trying to steal again. If we shove here now, we've picked up 2,500 plus the Andes from him, so about 3,000 extra chips than what we started the hand with.
Well,
which is almost a third of our stack. So
it's very difficult because I agree. What if is a good what if?
If we're wrong, then we still are open ended.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like a semi bluff kind of re raise here or whatever raise, but Now I'm just getting into trouble with a draw and no. Even if I hit my jack, it's not good. Probably, you know, or this is brutal. I mean, he could have been trying to, but you know, if he was trying to steal preflop, I think he would make it more than min raise because people are inclined to call min raises.
I don't think so.
You're inclined to call min raise. You even said to me earlier, I said, I don't think about folding. You're like, you're going to fold?
Yeah, you were thinking about folding, right?
And you're like, what? You can't do that. So you're clearly in the lower denomination of this poker world. So I was thinking, you know, hey, you know what? This guy's probably making a move on me, but is it really worth it with Jack 9? If I really re-raise this guy and then he shoves on me, now I've wasted more chips than my 10,000. So I don't know. I don't think that min raise meant. Maybe it did mean he was stealing. Maybe he was trying to play connectors and just getting the money in the pot to make it.
All right, so wait a minute. Let's go back and put ourselves in the small blind frame of mind, right? So yeah. He just knocked us out of this tournament, right?
Yeah.
So now we just rebuy. Don't you think that human nature is that person is vulnerable now? Us being, right?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of vulnerability there, right?
Right.
We just, I mean, I played a rebuy tournament before where I got knocked out, called for the rebuy, got my chips, and threw them all in the next hand. And won, fortunately. But that doesn't happen very often, right?
Yeah.
Usually, I think human nature is, oh my gosh, I just got knocked out in the last hand, which doesn't mean anything. So I'm going to play a little cautiously this hand. Because I don't want to rebuy again with one hand.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is going to put a little more pressure on it now. And the 1800, I mean, if he's a smart player, he probably knows that this bet is pot committing us. So that's probably a pretty smart bet. And it's on the small end of the pot committing, right?
Yeah, I can't.
If we come over the top, then he can probably fold it and not worry about it too much. But he knows that if he's a smart player, he knows he's putting us to a test for all of our chips one hand after he just took all of our chips.
Well, a raise here, I mean, obviously it has to be a shove. So, I don't really dislike the raise in the sense that we have outs, and there's two ways to win this hand. You can hit it, or this guy could fold because he was either stealing or just thinks that because you're in the blind, maybe you flopped a set of fives or something, and you're willing to get it in, or maybe you had queen 10, now you got two pair, and that's why you defend it with it. It's a legitimate hand to defend with. So, yeah, so there's two ways to win, and, you know, I didn't like getting in the situation at the beginning, but now that I'm in it, I mean, you've talked me into it. Maybe I just shove here. Because I'm not calling.
Peer pressure.
Yeah, I guess I'll shove. I'm not going to fold. I can open-ended draw here. A decent amount of money out there. And this guy could be just playing us. So maybe I do re-raise him and shove.
Yep, exactly. That's what we're going to do.
All right, let's do that.
All right, our hero calls.
Oh!
The turn is the 8 of diamonds. So now it's a queen of spades, 10 of diamonds, 5 of spades, 8 of diamonds. And the small blind checks now.
Yay! Well, we made our straight, so made the nut straight. I don't know. Bet half the pot.
Really? You're not gonna shove? You don't feel?
Well, why shove now? Because now you're trying to get some. I mean, maybe you make him fold, but if you bet enough, there he might think I can redraw on this guy or something. If he has something,
okay.
Might as well bet and make it a legitimate bet.
Fair enough. All right, so our hero decides to bet 4,000, leaving him 3,000 behind, and the small blind calls.
Nice.
The river is the 8 of spades, so now it's the queen of spades, 10 of diamonds, 5 of spades, 8 of diamonds, 8 of spades, and the small blind shoves.
Nice, because, let's see, a full house got there, quads got there, and a flush got there. Perfect. Yeah, well, we can't fold. We lost, but we can't fold. We only have 3,000 left, and there's that. I mean, it's 3,650. I mean, what are you gonna do? You know, and we're in a blind the next hand too, right?
Yeah, small blind. Yep.
Yeah. Oh well, it's a rebuy. Let's hope we have another 100 in our pocket, and there's still time.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. So, yeah, you're right. If it's a rebuy, then that gives us the insurance that we need to make this call, right? But if the rebuy period's over, or we've already decided that this is our last bullet, which, if that was the case, we probably wouldn't have gotten this hand to begin with, right?
Mm.
Now I think we have to think about it. So you're right. If we fold, we have less than five big blinds because we have Annie. Our Am is even smaller than that. Mm. And we're small blind next time. So we don't have a lot of chips left. But if we're confident that we're lost here, it seems silly to make the call, right? And there's so much here that just happened that he could be on a bluff, but it just, I'm not confident that I am going to be continuing at this table without putting another $100 in on this one, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. Plus, you know, for, you know, that $100, you're going to get back your $10,000 and try to get back those chips. It's going to be a lot harder to get those chips back with $4,000 in front of you. You know, you go into a rebuy, you go in knowing that you're probably going to use all these buy-ins to get all the chips on the table anyway. So if you have another rebuy, you do it. You just shove and say, all right, you got me, but now there's more chips to take from you later.
But if you don't, I guess, is my point, that even though it leaves us incredibly short stack, more short stack than I'm ever comfortable with, is that not better than...
It is. It's better than getting out. But you don't know for sure you're beat either. You know, the guy could have just...
You never know for sure, but what's your feeling? Let's take all the chips and all the thing away from this situation. What is your feeling? Are we beat or not here?
Yeah, we're beat. It feels like he flushed out or filled up somehow.
Right. So if our feeling is... And it's a pretty good feeling, I think, for both of us, right?
Yeah.
Then now I might have to fold here and just survive. Hopefully I can still rebuy and all that, and then it's an easier decision because now I'll call, and if I'm wrong, then if I'm wrong about that, then I'm still in and have a massive stack and I'm awesome.
Yeah.
But if the rebuy period's over, I don't have another $100 in my wallet. I think right now so much got there that I'm going to have to think about tournament survival now and fold here. And it's unfortunate because neither one of us would have been in the situation. You probably would have folded pre-flop. We would have shoved already, and then it wouldn't have been a choice at all, you know.
Right.
But now it is a choice, so it is a choice, and we have to think about it. We can't just say, oh, we should have shoved before, and it wouldn't have been a choice, because it is a choice now. So.
Yep. Huh. Well, I agree with you that if I have that sinking feeling that I'm definitely beat and I'm not rebuying, I might consider folding, because everything got there on the river. Everything.
Everything.
And even something like...
Right.
Even if he was doing something crazy like had 10-8, you know, or queen 8, you know, that got there for a full house, you know, and played it the same way. That's probably how a two pair would have played this hand. You know, flush got there. That's probably could be the way a flush would have played this hand. You know, I don't know if maybe the check on the turn, I don't know, you would have bet it. But other than that, but yeah, so maybe I do fold, but I feel like if I'm in the moment and I'm just imagining myself at the table, I'm probably calling and hoping he hit 3-8s, you know, like he, you know, was bluffing at it on the flop, and then we got called, then he picks up a piece on the turn, checks, and we check, so now he's got a free shot at the river, makes 3-8s on us, you know, like he had like 8-8 or something, you know, and that's why he raised pre-flop. So that's the little glimmer of hope I have, is that maybe he has 3-8s.
If he has 3-8s, then he's got a full house, because there's 2-10s on the board.
No. It's two eights. Are the that's the thing. The eights got there. So let's say that. Let's say that and call.
Okay. Wow, boy, that's thin.
We came up with a real thin hand to make it legitimate.
All right. So we decided to call off our last 3,000s, feeling kind of sick. Yeah, we feel you there. Sure enough, he turns over the 10 of clubs, 8 of clubs.
Oh man. I mentioned that hand too. Oh man.
Sense, so he was trying to steal, right?
Yeah.
And then we stubbornly came along, and then he actually hit a piece of it, so he's like, all right, I might as well see if I can win now. And we stuck around, and then he hit his two pair, which is kind of interesting now that he slowed down there.
That is weird that he checks a turn.
Because he's trying to hope that, I guess, to trap us, but then we check behind, and then obviously he got lucky on the river. Yeah, he did get lucky there. But it is odd to me that he didn't continue the pressure, because that hand is so hidden there, right?
Yeah, the check behind is really...
Plus,
really
you got the spades going on, too. If we just called, I mean, spades are a very likely holding for us on how we acted here. So
the check behind, though, is really bad. Because, first of all, why are you playing the hand if you're not going to bet it when you get it? Second of all, it looks like you're floating him. And so when you bet there, he might say, oh, he's just floating me, and he'll shove on you. Then you get all his chips when he thinks you're bluffing and you got the nuts. So to not bet that turn is really tough. Now, not that he's going to go anywhere now that we know he has 10-8. But
right,
even
exactly.
So,
I think results-oriented, we're losing this hand regardless.
Right. So, but if you shove on the flop, he probably folds. If you shove on a turn, he gets it in bad and makes him think that, yeah, there's nothing, yeah. He might have gotten away with losing less if you had bet the turn and he called down the river, he checks to you, and then you check behind. You know, he's hoping to trap you for more. But
that's a good point.
I don't know. But even so, you're going to lose your money on this hand now that you played it. I would have folded. Thank you very much. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.